Jeremy Clarkson Brewery targeted by anti-hunt protesters.
Profit and turnover down at major dairy processors.
And according to Flora, dairy is a bit weird.
Anyway, that's enough of the falafel. I'm Paul.
I'm Anthony.
And this is episode 59 of Vegan Week. Welcome everyone to the show.
Absolutely. Whether this is your first time with us or your 59th time with us, you are very, very welcome. This is our Vegan Week show, Enough of the Falafel, where Paul and myself are going to look at the week's vegan and animal rights news. We also do, if this is the first time you've come across us, we also do a show called Vegan Talk, where we get a bit more philosophical and talk about broader themes in veganism. And also, if you search our back catalogue from January this year, you'll come across our Going Vegan series, where we've got a load of interviews with people about their vegan stories. So lots for you to get your teeth into. And before we go much further, we need to thank our sponsors, Fire and Flow Coffee. They are a 100% vegan specialty coffee retailer. They also do brilliant tea as well. You can find them at www.fireandflowcoffee.co.uk. And because you're an Enough of the Falafel listener, if you type in falafel 10, so that's the word falafel, and then the number 1 and the number 0, if you put that code in at the checkout when you're buying from them, you will get 10% off your order.
Right, that's enough of the falafel. Let's hear what's been going on in this week's news. Okay, so as normal, we'll be looking at around about 10 to a dozen or so stories, really briefly, and then we'll be looking at our own picks of the week, and then our main news story.
Okie coke. And Paul and I are going to alternate this week. We're going to try doing a story each and going back and forth, rather like a game of vegan tennis, if you will. So starting off with this one from Farming UK, who have reported this week that the UK sheep flock has seen a significant drop of over 5% year on year as of the end of 2023. So according to a latest census, there are just over 600,000 head, as it's called, in the female breeding flock. The latest data shows that the lowest number of breeding females seen on record is now the case. And as a result, a reduced lamb production is expected in 2024 following this contraction of the breeding flock. And just for a bit of wider context, we did report this a few weeks ago, I seem to remember, but the UK cattle population also dipped by about 2% last year too. So lots of contraction, it seems, of numbers in UK animal ag, which I'm going to take as a positive.
Okay, next story. Los Angeles-based startup Yo Egg are launching what they claim is the world's first whole vegan eggs. These are previously only available via a food service after launching last spring. They're made up from soy and chickpea protein base with sunflower oil. There is zero cholesterol and low saturated fat content, and are available in 4-packs in the freezer section of several retailers in LA.
We're saying, Paul, that it's the world's first, but this is a bold claim that we know not to be the case, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So when I read the story, it made me think, obviously, we've had, I've only recently found them, Sinless Egg, which I've been having out the freezer. They do a fried egg and boiled egg, and actually really nice, I have to say. No payment for me coming there. And also one of our local producers here, VegLife, have been making boiled eggs as part of their Scotch egg production, and they're massively tasty as well. Really, really nice.
Absolutely. Well, good news for people in LA, at least. moving on to this one from the Animal Reader, a really sad story, I'm afraid. Devastating fire at a large pig fattening factory in Germany killed 20,000 pigs last week. The fire started late Friday afternoon. Over 200 firefighters worked throughout the weekend to contain it, giving you an idea of the scale of that incident. It happened at LFD Holding, which is dubbed Germany's largest pig factory. It's been repeatedly criticised for animal cruelty. And indeed, 3 years ago in 2021, a major fire killed 55,000 pigs, including piglets. Really sad story there. And just another example of something perhaps people don't necessarily consider when they're thinking about the impact of animal ag. There's obviously the animals killed for food, but if you're keeping animals cooped together like this, then you've got a high chance of tragedies like this wiping out tens of thousands of innocent animals. So really sad news, that one.
So moving to a more positive story, and a brand that people will be very familiar with in this country, obviously. So Flora, in the new campaign, a branding dairy, a bit weird, launching innovative new sustainable vegan products off the back of that. There is a video ad available, and it's on YouTube as well. It's the latest in the brand's Skip the Cow campaign, wider campaign, set to bring a pro plant-based message to mainstream channels. So really good news there from someone who is a household name, obviously historically been associated with dairy a lot more, but really moving in the right direction, hopefully.
Now on to what might seem like quite a minor localized story here, but perhaps something that epitomizes some of the problems with animal agriculture in this country, and indeed the way the law deals with it. So this comes to us from Cambridgeshire local news. A 21-year-old farmer has been sentenced following an investigation by Cambridgeshire Trading Standards in relation to 16 animal welfare offences. So the farmer's called Jack Smith. He farms cattle and pigs near the town of March. He pleaded guilty following the investigations by officers from the local council's trading standards. So I'm going to go through the details of some of the things he's been charged and pleaded guilty for. So animals kept in hazardous environments below standard conditions and given an inadequate diet. Farming practices were deemed poor. Sick and injured animals were not housed appropriately with the necessary bedding or protected from pain and suffering. And furthermore, veterinary advice wasn't sought within appropriate timeframes to enable animals to receive the care they needed. So a raft of problems there, which have been investigated. He's pleaded guilty for it. However, that the punchline for me really comes in the sentence and the consequences. So he's been handed an 18-month conditional discharge. Now, I'm not up with the law and what these things mean. So I looked it up, and it seems that that basically means he won't be charged so long as there's not another offence within the next 18 months. So basically, he's not been charged. He's been ordered to pay a victim surcharge. I'm going to pause for listeners to guess how much for all those offences he's had to pay. The victim surcharge is £26. Literally, that's it. I might be missing something. There might be nuances of the law here where actually it's a lot harsher for him. But with all of those offences, it really seems like he's got away with this other than publicly being listed for all those things. But really infuriating that. But at least it's made a few newspapers.
Yeah, sickening stuff, really. I don't know if that article, and does it say anything about him being banned from keeping animals at all in the future? Because that would be a typical sort of result you'd see from this sort of case, I'd have thought.
Well, I couldn't see anything. I'm going to have a quick scan through it now. Nope. Can't see anything that says that. And in fact, the fact that it's a conditional discharge suggests that they're expecting him to continue farming. And it's just, don't do it again. And so long as you don't do it for 18 months, you'll get away with it. Apart from that hefty £26 fine, of course.
Yeah, interesting that someone who claims to have a profession based around animals doesn't get that. Whereas someone, if you were an individual, you'd expect that. Interesting. Yeah.
But of course, we have the highest welfare standards in this country. Absolutely. Don't we? Yeah.
And I'm sure this is the only case, because all farmers love their animals right up to the point. Yes. In this law. Okay, next story then, over to the science bit, I guess, for these stories here. So a new study released this week is reporting that a low-fat vegan diet, high in fibre and carbohydrates and moderate in protein, actually reduces insulin requirement, increases insulin sensitivity, and improves glycemic control in individuals with type 1 diabetes. So just take all that in for a second. This is compared with a conventional portion-controlled diet, and the study was completed with 18 participants in the vegan diet group and 17 in the portion-controlled group. And the study was supported by the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine and a grant from the Institute for Technology in Healthcare.
Sounds pretty positive. Ooh. Okay, I've had a couple of grumpy stories, so let's have a more positive one now. This comes to us from Wild Justice, and we'll put a link in the show notes. I'd really encourage listeners, if you have a minute, follow the link for this one, because it's a really positive story and an organisation who I'd not heard of before, doing a lot of good work. So they have been challenging DEFRA recently, saying that basically the way that game bird licensing has been done is unlawful. And they have this week won their case, which is fantastic news. Here is the case. It's going to require a bit of explaining, so bear with me. So basically, if a shoot wants to release game birds, they need to apply for a DEFRA license. And they do that via Natural England. And what Natural England does is it takes these applications, sends them to a committee at DEFRA, and sends some suggestions of approval or rejection. But then what happens is this committee review the advice from Natural England. Sometimes they change it, and then they send the new advice to ministers, and then ministers are the people who make the final decision as to whether the shoot can be licensed or not. And what Wild Justice have been suspicious of is that this advice from Natural England has been gone against or changed. And so they've put this challenge forward, and this week it has been deemed as unlawful. So DEFRA is paying Wild Justice costs up to £35,000 because of this, and there's a new consent order. Lots more details on the link that is in our show notes, but sounds like some potentially shady goings on have been exposed and been successfully challenged. So really positive sounding stuff there.
And whilst the money is probably useful, I think the fact that people don't think they can go on and do these things without being pulled up is probably the main thing there for me for that one.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just a message saying, like, don't think you can sneak these things, you know, under the carpet, like we're coming for you.
Next story, staying with science, although perhaps juxtaposed with it being reported by the Daily Mail. A slightly less positive story here, but as I say, reported by the Daily Mail, summarised from a scientific study. So a new study by scientists at the National University of Singapore and published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition found that people who ate a diet high in fake meats like Beyond Burgers and Impossible Burgers for 8 weeks had higher blood sugars than those who ate real meat. Authors wrote that this puts them at higher risk for developing heart disease and diabetes down the line, and the study was based on 89 Singaporeans with an increased risk of type 2 diabetes. So again, a bit like our previous study, not a massive sample if you're a science sort of person. And also, obviously, this is a summarized story. I had a quick look at it, couldn't see a lot about any references out to the actual study. I think there's quite a lot of holes in this as well. So were people just eating these burgers? What were the other things they were eating? 8 weeks, is that a great deal of time to notice these things?
I think as well, it's just good. Although it risks putting veganism in a negative light, I think we just need to get it out there that actually, yeah, if you eat vegan burgers all the time, it's not going to be great for your health. Like, that's fine. It's kind of, although it's annoying, I think it's probably good that that's just out there and people understand that and accept that.
Yeah,
Because otherwise it feels like a gotcha. At the moment, that's being reported in the Daily Mail as you see vegans? Whereas actually none of us are saying that that's healthy. So it kind of needs to be, yeah, we know. We know that that's not healthy. None of us are saying it is. To my knowledge, like, anyway.
No, and I think, you know, we have to be honest as well. And these products, you know, and I love these products, so I'm a big, sort of mock meat eater. But you know, after you've eaten some of them, a bit like maybe like when you have a Chinese meal or something like that, the salt must be massively high in it, because I love salt. I'm a real bugger for it. But you know, it's massively high in salt when you've eaten it. But it's not meant to be healthy. That's why you have it. But and you wouldn't. I mean, who is going to eat burgers for 8 weeks? You know, I mean, it's not going to happen, is it?
Well, if you're trying to bring down your blood sugar, then no, just eating, eating burgers is a no, isn't it? That's not to say that anyone with diabetes mustn't eat burgers. Like, that's up to them. But like, if that's what you're trying to do, then no, Beyond Meat is not a great way of doing it. Nor probably is eating a real beef burger, is it?
No, exactly.
There we go. Anyway, last one from me now. This is following a vigorous PETA campaign. This is in PETA's words. The Haddy Shrine Circus, which I had to look it up, it is based in America and described as America's last great circus. They have decided that they are no longer going to exploit elephants in their shows, which is great news. Like I say, PETA are saying this is following their campaign, which included more than 250,000 emails from their supporters, as well as spirited protests, letters to sponsors. So great news for elephants who are no longer being forced to perform at the Haddy Shrine Circus under constant threats of punishment.
Okay, and then my last story, and the one we'll be talking about in a bit more detail later on. So Lakeland Dairies, who are the largest cross-border dairy processor in the island of Ireland, have announced that its turnover and profit fell in 2023 after what it dubs a challenging year. The company has blamed the collapse in global dairy markets and has seen a fall in operating profits from €32.5 million, which is about £28 million, in 2022 to €14.8 million or £12.6 million in 2023.
Gosh, that sounds like a challenging year. Only £12.5 million profit. God.
Yeah.
I'd love those kind of challenges. Right. As ever, we do not have time to go into loads of detail for each of these stories. We've obviously just covered the basics there. If you want to learn more about these stories, we've got links in our show notes to all of the sources that we got them from. But we do have time for Paul and myself to pick out one in particular, our favourite ones that we want to talk about in some more detail, as well as our pick for the week. So, Paul, I gather from what you've just said that this Lakeland Dairy story is your pick for the week. Is that right?
Yeah. So, yeah, looks good on the surface. When I certainly read it, I thought this is great. More news stories supporting the sort of thing we've seen, I think, in the States sort of over the last few years about the market and demand falling for dairy and the increased market for non-dairy milks. So, yeah, seems like a good story. The thing I think this story confused me a little bit about is it talks about the global market collapse. Now, I'm assuming that is talking about a drop in demand. So that's kind of one question I had there. So assuming that's the case, still a good news story. When you delve into it a little bit more, if listeners look at the actual article, it talks more about costs increasing and other factors like that. And I'm imagining if this is a cross-border operation in Ireland, there's probably a hell of a lot of Brexit-related admin, etc., and costs that are going on there. So, yeah, I think it is a good news story, but I wonder how much of it is down to costs. If they're talking about things like taxation, as I say, Brexit, maybe we shouldn't assume this is just down to demand, and it could be more of a pure financials here. But it's interesting. I guess my question would be, what are the other processors in Ireland talking about in terms of their profits? Is this just an isolated incident? Are they reporting a drop? You know, is it costs that are kind of really driving the problem here? Also, you know, it'd be interesting to see out of some of these suppliers who's diversifying, because we know that some of the dairy manufacturers out there, some of the big ones particularly, are starting to diversify. They're recognising the need to invest in non-dairy products. You know, and some of those big producers out there, whether it's sort of Malure or people like that, are starting to do that. It's probably, I don't know the figures, but it's probably fairly small. But they are recognising there is profit to be made and there is a market that is out there that doesn't want their normal animal products. So, yeah, fairly positive, but with a pinch of salt, I think.
Yeah, it was certainly thought-provoking. And I mean, no industry, no company is completely bulletproof. So when we've got multiple things that are affecting things, like you're pointing out, Paul, it's unlikely to just be a drop in demand that's causing this. But actually, it does question, well, how robust is this industry? I just did some quick maths on those numbers, because they reported in this article what their turnover was and what their profit was, and it's less than 1% of their turnover is their profit. So that's an industry with incredibly tight margins. Now, admittedly, that seems to be in a lean year, but like it does just drill home like quite how fragile these industries are. Obviously, from a vegan and animal rights point of view, we just want them finished. But like you say, like diversifying is a way of shoring up a complex system that is potentially fragile. So that could play into plant-based food and drink in a way, couldn't it? I think just as well, it's not a surprise, but there's no mention of animals' well-being, welfare, or anything in there, you know. And really, that the headline is saying, "Oh, it's been a challenging year for the dairy industry." Well, really, a shareholder getting a smaller dividend from the £12.6 million overall profit, that's not a challenging year, and it's not challenging in any way the same as the challenges that are going on for the victims of the dairy industry, is it? And that's, you know, it really drills that home. But
yeah, absolutely. I was going to say exactly the same thing. There's not a mention of welfare at all, obviously, in the article. I suppose to some degree, I mean, they haven't said that trying to offer better welfare, what they deem better welfare, I should say, is costing them more money. I mean, because that's been a claim, obviously, for years about British products, if you like, British dairy, British meat. They haven't even bothered to quote that. So it's just purely about the readies here.
Yes. I forget who said it on the pod a few weeks ago, but whilst we might not be pro-welfare measures, actually, every welfare measure costs the industry more money. So it makes it less and less economically feasible, and you'd wonder whether actually when this industry does eventually collapse or close, it might just be that people just say, do you know what, this is just not financially worthwhile, let's just jack it in. Which brings me on to my pick for the week. Potentially, I'd be very interested to know what has led Flora to its current state in terms of its the stance that it's putting out there. But it is very much, if you go on Flora's website now, and this is following their latest ad release, where they've been, as Paul said earlier, they've been dubbing dairy as weird. If you look on their website, it's like the most pro-vegan website I've ever been on in terms of a capitalist company. Obviously, it's not an animal rights charity's website, but in terms of a company, like, they've got five tabs at the top of their website, and one of them is called Skip the Cow, plant-based, and the word vegan is everywhere, and they're really drilling it home. I mean, this I wanted to focus on this one, not because of the advert itself, I have to say, which, I mean, they're saying dairy is weird. I thought the advert itself was pretty weird. I don't know if you've watched it, Paul, but it's
I've not seen it. No.
I don't watch much telly and much screen stuff, so like maybe this is just what adverts are like these days, but like it was a bit weird in itself, but maybe that was the point. But in terms of how brazen they're being with saying, do you know what, dairy's just a bit weird, like what's going on there, like that's incredible to see a company like that. I mean, I don't know about you, Paul, but like growing up, Flora was always on the table at breakfast. That was the butter we had, and it had dairy in it, and I mean, it's probably always been largely plant-based in terms of its recipe. I've been trying to research it this week, but I've not got much luck, but it certainly did used to have dairy in it, and there was, you know, no anti-dairy message in the company at all. A few years ago, it became sort of one of these that was accidentally vegan, we might say, and there became a stage where all of their stuff was plant-based. Then for a period, at least one product started having some dairy in it again, but now they're completely plant-based. Everything on their website and in their marketing is saying, like, thanks, there was a sort of pun, like, thanks for the mammaries, dairy, but like, we're going to leave animal products behind now, skip the cow and all of this. It's fabulous. And it's like, I mean, a company like Flora has got a huge marketing budget, a huge influence. Like, I just feel like this is going to have a real impact, this brazen campaign they're doing.
It's interesting, because this is a sort of company that's presumably got a lot of money to do a lot of R&D and a lot of research and go out and speak to people. So you've got to hope that this reflects, you know, they're not going to do this out of the goodness of their own hearts. Like you say, it's a capitalist organisation. They must be going out there and hearing people saying, yeah, I don't want to eat dairy, I want to eat less dairy, whether that's, you know, driven by maybe younger customers. So yeah, really, really good. You do have to wonder, don't you, what the view from when the dairy industry is of this, you know, would they be seen as a sort of turncoat organisation now? And of course, you know, is this the sign of things to come? You know, that's what we hope, obviously.
Yeah, and like you say, Paul, like as many problems as many of us may have with capitalism, actually money talks, and big corporations like this are not going to make a bold move like this unless they're pretty confident it's going to come off. I mean, of course it might not, and you've equally got animal-based companies that are making bold moves in the other direction, so it's not guaranteed, but like they're taking firm stances. Interestingly as well, they say that none of their spreads or butters contain palm oil anymore. I know there was a period when they were perhaps completely plant-based, but they were still using palm oil, but now they're saying that they're not using that at all, which is great news. That's another kind of thing that we don't necessarily have to worry about. Obviously, it's not a miracle product. Obviously, you know, there's all sorts of problems that we might have with something that's highly processed, like a plant-based butter. But in terms of getting an anti-animal ag message out there, they've got a heck of a platform and a heck of a voice. And yeah, I'm glad they're doing it. And it really took me aback. I'd again, like Paul said, with the vegan eggs, I'm not getting it paid to say this, but maybe spend 30 seconds looking at Flora's website at the minute. I think it will take you by surprise how pro-vegan I might say it is. So yeah, we'll take that, I think. Right, I'm going to suggest we move on to our main story now, featuring perhaps not someone we might be expecting to be discussing on Vegan Week, in the shape of Jeremy Clarkson. So I'll give us a bit of a rundown on the background of this story, and then we'll say what we think about it. So I'm reading from the Gloucestershire Live website at the minute, but this has been covered in multiple places. So Jeremy Clarkson's brewery has been targeted by anti-hunt protesters. Now, I should be clear right from the off, Jeremy Clarkson is not suspected of breaking the law in any way. However, it's been revealed, or it's been shared quite widely, that he has allowed a hunt onto his land. The hunt say that they're not doing anything illegal. There's lots of footage on various websites showing this story, where Hunt SABS and other organisations like Action Against Fox Hunting have taken footage and said, well, I think illegal stuff has been done actually by the hunt here. There's a badger set that's been blocked, and, you know, we suspect this, that and the other. But protesters have gone outside his farm shop in Chadlington to protest this. And they're protesting, like I say, the fact that a hunt has taken place. I don't know whether it's partially or fully, but on his estate, on land that is owned by him. Lots of banners, lots of PR, and like I say, it's been covered in a lot of places. Paul, could I ask what your initial reaction to seeing this story has been? Has it been cynical? Has it been, oh, right, we need to go for this? What are your thoughts?
I think it's I'm broadly okay with it. I think he's a divisive figure, and this sort of story works both for the protesters as well as the media. You know, focusing on someone who is a name.
Do you think it works for Jeremy Clarkson as well, though? Because it's just giving him more column inches. I think that quite irritated me.
I hadn't really kind of gone on to that, but potentially yes, because, you know, if you take any news as good news, it's not exactly painting him in a light that he would probably be actually that bothered about, unless there was some kind of genuine accusations that could be upheld around legal behaviour. But he could say, yep, this is me, and I'm doing what I think. You know, that would probably be his stance, I imagine, here. And so nothing potentially bad for him, I guess, from this sort of story. Just supports his image on which he makes his living, ultimately.
Well, yeah, it does rather. I've got to say, it won't surprise listeners to know I can't quite make my mind up on this, but part of me wonders whether this is the best thing to be focusing attention on. I do get, from a strategic point of view, this is far more likely to get into the news, even though perhaps the alleged offences are less acute than other ones. Because it involves this big name, it's going to get into the newspaper, which we could see as a positive. But I did kind of think, oh gosh, surely there are a bigger crimes being taken place against animals, definite evidence and things like that. I don't know. It makes me cringe a little bit when, as a movement, we're falling into the trap of the mass media and dominant media and kind of just focusing on a celebrity, even though really it doesn't seem like there's much of a story here.
Yeah, I suppose the flip side is, if it was on someone's land, on someone that no one's ever heard of before, one would the media pick it up? It's not a paper selling story, is it? So I think I agree with you. There are a lot worse offences probably going on there, with, you know, Joe Bloggs being the perpetrator or being the person who's allowed people across the land. But people aren't interested in Joe Bloggs. They're interested in Jeremy Clarkson. So I suppose we have to ask, does this denigrate from the worst activities that are going on, or does it open people's mind to awareness of this sort of thing still going on? And then thinking about that, I could go either way, I guess.
I mean, one argument is, if you think about Arnold Schwarzenegger and the fact that he has not done a massive U-turn, because he's certainly not vegan now, but he has been, in the last few years, he's been, you know, a very strong advocate for plant-based eating and things like that. Very much someone you would not have thought 10, 20, 30 years ago would be saying, no, ditch the animal products. Is there an argument that, well, actually, if by some fluke or miracle we manage to change Jeremy Clarkson's mind on these things, like, that would be massive? Or is that just pie in the sky?
It would be massive. I think it would be highly unlikely.
Yeah.
And probably to the point of it, you'd rule it out, wouldn't you, I think, really? But, you know, hey, strange things happen. I can't see this one, though, unfortunately. I think there's too much image, too much income based on that image that rests on maintaining the status quo there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and not just income from his image, but like, he's literally invested in animal agriculture, isn't he?
Yeah.
Talking of stranger things happening, like, reading this article, and this quote came in most of the articles, the Heythrop hunt, which is the hunt that alleged to have been given permission to use his land, they were defending themselves in the article, unsurprisingly. And just listen to this in terms of them describing their own activity. They are saying, it's ridiculous that we're being persecuted for doing this activity. It's perfectly lawful. But listen to them just describing what they do every weekend. So, the Heythrop Hunt conducts lawful trail hunting activities to comply with the Hunting Act. The hunt liaises with landowners to obtain permission to conduct an activity which complies with the law and which is regulated by the British Hound Sports Association. More than 12,000 days of trail hunting take place each year, yet hunts and landowners are regularly subjected to spurious allegations made by activists with a political agenda to stop an activity which simply involves people following a pack of hounds which are following a scent that has been dragged across the countryside on a smelly rag. Like, is that an advert? Like,
what, for the Daily Mail?
Yeah. Do you want to follow a pack of hounds following a scent that's been dragged across the countryside on a smelly rag? Sign here. Join the hunt. Like, it did make me chuckle.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. It's not laughable, but I think we all know the stories, even the ones where there's this sort of expectation that people are given permission on certain bits of land, and that there's this magical barrier that's going to stop the hounds going off into other people's adjoining properties. And, you know, there's, I remember from literature going back ages ago, hunt subs, the amount of animal pets been absolutely mauled to death by dogs because they've just cut across a garden or something like that, or some other land. So it's a nonsense. It's what you expect. It's the standard line. It's what they're going to say. So, yeah.
Yeah. Even if they were themselves abiding the law, you can't sit down a hound and give it a PowerPoint presentation or an online training course to explain these things. Act on instinct, don't they? Okay, let's bring that conversation to an end then, and indeed this week's episode of Vegan Week.
So those of you who listened to this, what do you think about this main story we've just covered here, or anything else indeed that we've covered in the show? You can let us know by sending your thoughts in to enoughofthefalafel@gmail.com.
Indeed. And thank you everybody for listening. It is always lovely to know that there are people out there, whether you get in touch with us or not. We can see when there's been a download, and it's really fabulous to see all of you all around the world tuning in, which is fabulous. And do, as I said at the top of the show, check out that back catalogue if you haven't already. We've got the Vegan Talk Show, which airs every Thursday, and our Going Vegan series, which we've got 10 of those, and they aired in January 2024 of this year.
And as Ed mentions, every Thursday we've got an episode of Vegan Talk, and the next talk coming up this Thursday, we'll see Anne and myself talking about veganism and cars. That's an interest close to my heart. So what exploitation is involved in the production of cars, and which models are maybe improving the landscape? Is it even possible to be vegan and drive a car in the first place?
Anyway, that is enough of the falafel for this episode. I've been Anthony.
And I've been Paul.
And you've been listening to episode 59 of Vegan Week.
This show is kindly sponsored by our friends at Fire and Flow Coffee Roasters. And they're such great people, they're offering all Enough of the Falafel listeners a cheeky 10% off orders on their online store when using the code FALAFEL10. That's Falafel, the number 10. Fire and Flow are a specialty coffee roastery based in the Cotswold with a fully vegan coffee shop on site.
Yeah, they're a vegan founded company too. They're ran by three friends, Shah, Callum and Phil, and they specialise in roasting and supplying wholesale coffee beans to coffee shops, restaurants, hotels and offices.
For the wholesale part of their operations, they work with other businesses to help them get the most out of their coffee offering, with free barista training and full technical support included.
The products themselves are the result of their passion for working with skilled and ethical-minded farmers who produce the highest quality beans. Fire and Flow then roast them to perfection in small batches at their roastery in Cirencester, which you can visit at any time, book onto one of their barista courses or roastery tours via their website, fireandflowcoffee.co.uk.
While you're there, you can check out the beautiful, fully vegan coffee shop on site. I've been there myself. It's absolutely brilliant. And it's open 7 days a week from 9 till 3. The last time I went, it was a Sunday afternoon. It was glorious. It's just a fab place to hang out and feel good about life.
Give them a follow on Instagram to get the latest at Fire and Flow Coffee. And for those online orders, remember the code exclusively for our brilliant Enough of the Falafel community. That is Falafel10. 10 is 1 and 0. So Falafel10.